The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
But first, we start this morning in Rome, where cardinals are currently meeting to decide the date of the funeral for Pope Francis, who passed away yesterday, aged 88. The funeral could take place as early as Friday, with Francis's body lying in St. Peter's Basilica in state for people to pay their respects in the days beforehand. To get the latest, we're joined now by Elise Ann Allen, senior correspondent in Italy for The Crux. Good morning, Elise.
Good morning. It's wonderful to be with you.
Now, there is a choreography to all of this. There is a protocol that has been observed over the recent years in the burial of a pope and also the ensuing conclave. Will this one be any different because of the nature of Francis's papacy?
You know, in terms of what comes first, no. You know, this is the Catholic Church's tradition in terms of how it mourns for a pope. You know, it was a little different for Benedict XVI when he passed because, of course, he had resigned. So it wasn't the full papal treatment. You know, it was still quite significant. But Francis, you know, we haven't had a full papal funeral since John Paul II, you know, in 2005. So it's been 20 years. But there is an official 9-day period of mourning that the church has entered into following his death. He's expected to be buried between the 4th and the 6th day. We are still waiting to hear the date of his funeral. But we've heard now just a moment ago, he's been placed in the coffin and they're going to transfer his coffin into St. Peter's Basilica tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. Rome time for laying in state. And it will give faithful from around the world in Rome, you know, heads of state, whoever wants to come to pay their final respects to Pope Francis will have, I believe that they allowed 48 hours to do that, and then he will be taken out and prepared for the funeral. So that's sort of what to expect over the next couple of days. And then after the funeral, of course, we'll get into pre-conclave meetings. They're called general congregations, and then the conclave itself.
Now, the lying in state, we've seen previous imagery of that, and the Pope is on some sort of raised platform, maybe to make it easier for the faithful to pay their respects to his body. This Pope wants something rather simpler. He will not be elevated. He'll be in a simple coffin, which may make it more difficult for the faithful to see his body.
Perhaps because it's not raised, it will be a little more difficult for them to have a good view of him. You know, they are going to be able to see him, however, because with the way that they arrange it, the coffin will still be placed sort of in this open space in front of the main altar in St. Peter's Basilica. You know, there's this little staircase that goes down, you know, to the tomb of St. Peter there. So he'll be placed in that space. And there will be a barricade placed there, and faithful will be crossing in front of that single file. So you're going to have attendants there who are kind of ushering people forward. They usually try to, you know, get people moving through pretty quickly. So, you know, we'll see kind of what pace they'll keep. But they're going to be able to have, you know, a front row view of Pope Francis and of his coffin. How much of them they're going to be able to view with the simplified format, you know, we'll have to wait and see until tomorrow morning when those first images come. But they will still have the moment to have sort of a one-on-one in faced with Pope Francis for that final goodbye.
Now, he has, in his last will and testament, he has indicated where he wants to be buried. There are a few interesting things in his last words, written, I think, in 2022, but he says where he wants to be buried, very simple, with just Franciscus as the note on the gravestone, and his burial will be paid for by a benefactor.
Yeah, so this is, you know, Francis, you know, the Vatican and doesn't have a huge surplus, you know, to be paying for things. They have, of course, the money to pay for papal funerals, you know. I think the key thing you mentioned here is just the simplicity of it. You know, him in being very much himself, even in death and even in his final repose, you know, and changing things up. You know, all popes, you know, it's been 100 years since any pope was buried outside of Vatican City. Most are buried in the grotto underneath beneath St. Peter's Basilica. But he wants to do things his way, as he always did. You know, he loves the Basilica of St. Mary Major. It was very dear to him throughout his 12 years as Pope. He visited it, you know, before and after every international trip. He would lay flowers at this, you know, the famed Maria Salus Popoli Romani icon, Mary, Health of the Roman People. He had a very strong devotion to that. And he wanted to, you know, in keeping with his instinct, you know, for popular piety, which is very, very much cultural. It's a cultural instinct for him, you know, being Argentinian. He wanted to have his final resting place with a devotion that was so special to him.
Now, it will be presumably available to be visited by the public. I wonder how appropriate it will be, because I suspect there will be a huge, huge number of pilgrims who will want to visit his last resting place on visits to Rome over the coming years.
I'm sure that you're exactly right. You know, they're going to have some sort of protocols in place. You know, Pope Francis in that will and testament said that you know, Rolando Marcinkus, you know, the cardinal archpriest of St. Mary Major, you know, has been informed of all the specifics and they have a plan in place. We don't have all the details of that yet, but presumably in the days and the weeks after Pope Francis's burial, there will be, you know, some sort of area designated or a special line designated, you know, where people can line up to go pay respects to him there at his grave, you know, his tomb, you know, in, you know, the chapel there at the Basilica. So we don't know exactly what all that's going to look like, but you can be sure without a doubt that St. Mary Major is going to be a very important new pilgrimage destination for Catholics coming to Rome, especially in the near future.
Now, Elise, the question of the funeral and the announcement by Donald Trump that he will attend, I don't know whether you have to be invited to attend or whether world leaders can just willfully decide themselves they want to be there. But the addition of Donald Trump to a papal funeral adds a whole layer of complexity in security terms.
Well, it certainly does, you know, and, you know, Donald Trump, as somebody, he and the Pope have had, you know, their butting of heads over the years. You know, they're two people who have disagreed on almost everything, you know, in their approach, you know, to matters, especially such as migration and climate change, you know, and even recently the Pope had chastised the Trump administration for its mass deportation plan. So there is some baggage there. But I think the fact that, you know, Donald Trump does come, you know, it shows that there's a sign of willingness to put that aside, you know, out of respect for the man. You know, Pope Francis, whether you agreed or disagreed with him, is somebody, you know, who made a difference and who the world listened to, you know, who captivated the world. And I think that there is a respect for somebody of his caliber, of the, you know, so the gravitas that he had, but also as the spiritual leader that he was. So it's a recognition of the importance of that man, regardless of whatever differences they might carry, you know, or might have carried in this life. And of course, security is going to be, you're going to have all kinds of heads of state there. Security is going to be a mess. It's going to be very difficult to move around in Rome those days. And we just got news right now. I'm sorry, just came in, that his funeral will be on Saturday at 10 in the morning. So we can expect Saturday to be a very busy day here in Rome.
I mean, the cynics would say that the action on Saturday when the funeral happens will be in Rome. All eyes will be on Rome. And Donald Trump does not like all eyes not to be on him. So he's got to be there.
Well, certainly that would be the expectation, right? If there's something major happening in the world, he'll want a front seat to it, I would imagine. It's hard to envision that not taking place. But, you know, we're, of course, waiting for the final confirmation to come in.
Now, the conclave, of course, will happen once all of this is over, when they are locked in the Sistine Chapel and they select a new pope, and they have something of a time deadline set for them. I'm not sure what happens if they can't make a decision by the deadline.
Well, conclaves don't have a specific deadline. I mean, the longest conclave in history, I think, lasted 2.5 years, you know, and the shortest one was, you know, less than a day. So anything can happen once those you enter the conclave and the doors of the Sistine Chapel close. Anything is possible. Usually a conclave takes a few days. We have to see what happens in this case, because so many of the cardinals who will be voting this time simply do not know one another. They come from small, remote countries or dioceses that are far away and therefore do not come to Rome very often because of the cost and the complexity involved. So these are cardinals who many of them are unfamiliar with each other. They don't know each other personally, let alone pastorally, and how they would be as administrators. You know, so these pre-conclave meetings, the general congregations, are going to be very important this time around. You know, Pope Francis's last two synods of bishops in Rome the last 2 years, 2023 and 2024, were hugely important for that, because all the cardinals who were here had an opportunity to start to get to know one another. So it depends on how those meetings go, and if the cardinals are able to know each other well enough in those days to get a feel for a sort of consensus on what direction they might be wanting to take the church in and who might be the right person for that. Beyond that, I think we have to see what happens in those days. Once those doors close, it's a mystery.
Now, I'm sure interest, which is always very high in any conclave, will be heightened yet again because of the popularity of the movie Conclave, based on a novel by Robert Harris. And the public who maybe might have no interest or any historical sense of what conclaves do will be imagining all sorts of chicanery going on within the Sistine Chapel.
Yes, I'm sure they will. This movie, I think this has got to be the best promotional material for the movie ever, you know. Not that this was intended, right? But this is certainly shedding a light on you know, the film and what the world it's trying to give, you know, people a glimpse into, you know. This is a fascinating process. You know, and I think, you know, of course, there are not everything in that movie is accurate, you know, from places to, you know, certain, you know, to the way things exactly play out, you know, but it does give the world a little peek into what this process is like. And, you know, that there is, you know, to an extent, there is some politicking behind the scenes, you know, who we want, you know, on these of this issue. You know, I don't think they're looking at specific issues. You know, I think the cardinals who go in are asking themselves, who is going to be a good leader for the church today, given, you know, the pastoral needs, you know, the lack of vocations in some areas of the world, rapid growth in others. You know, who's going to be able to navigate that? Who's going to be able to navigate well the geopolitical situation that we're in? You know, they're going to look for somebody that has the right, I think, administrative skills, the right pastoral skills, and a certain amount of political and diplomatic savvy, I would think. You know, so that's where those meetings come in handy ahead of time.
And finally, the electorate, I mean, it's a smaller number of cardinals than actually are living, because the age limit of 80 for voting rights in the conclave was brought in by Pope Francis. And therefore, most of the cardinals who will be voting were appointed by him.
That's true. He has over two-thirds of the, I think there are 138 cardinals of voting age. They're under 80 and therefore eligible to vote in the conclave. So over two-thirds of them have been appointed by Pope Francis. But that does not necessarily mean that you're going to get a new pope who is completely in line with his approach to everything. You know, Francis, remember, was elected by a majority cardinalate body that had been appointed by John Paul II and Benedict XVI, and he took things in a very different direction. So anything is really possible, and Francis really prioritized cardinals based off of, you know, location and wanting to make the College of Cardinals more diverse, you know, more expressive of the church's universal nature. And so he did that, you know, and some were, of course, you know, appointees due to personality and the specific person, you know, that he wanted to give that red hat to. But many of them are unknowns. And so we have to see what comes out. There could be a true wild card here. So we have to wait and see.
Yeah, and later on in the program, we will be talking about the prospective candidates, but it's all whimsy because who would have thought that Francis would be the man to become Pope? Elise Ann Allen, senior correspondent in Italy with the Crux, thank you very much for joining us. Now, when Pope Francis visited Ireland in 2018, one of the stops on his tour was Knock Shrine, where he led a crowd of 45,000 people in praying the Angelus. The parish priest of Knock, Father Richard Gibbons, was with Pope Francis on that day, and he joins us now. Father Richard Gibbons, good morning and welcome.
Thank you very much, Pat. Good morning to you and to your listeners.
Now, this was a man who wore sensible shoes and paid his sub every year to his local football club in Argentina. So he was a very different kind of Pope. What was he like in person?
When we met him here at Knock, the first thing I asked him when he left the Popemobile, was he in Knock before? And he said no, and then he said, tell me a little bit about it. And he was well briefed beforehand, of course, but I explained a little bit about the apparition itself. And then he came in and greeted people as he always did, shook hands, even though the protocol told everybody, don't put out your hand to greet the Pope. But he didn't heed that. He just shook hands with anybody that was there and came up to the front of the apparition chapel. And he sat, and then there was a moment of prayer, Pat, that nearly affected everybody that was there. A bell was rung, and everybody just, you could hear a pin drop, as they say. Not a word, not a voice, not a cry, nothing. And everybody just took that moment, about a minute of silent prayer in the apparition chapel. And then he proceeded then to leave the chapel to go outside to greet the 45,000 people that were there. And my mother was there. She was ill at the time and in a wheelchair. And he greeted her and just asked me what was wrong with her and what age she was. And she was in her mid-70s at that point. And he said, oh, she's too young to be sick, too young to be sick. Mm. So it was a very, probably reflecting maybe on himself, he was quite older than that. But it was a very touching moment and a very touching personal moment. But he had that empathy. He had that relaxed nature that he was very famous for. And he was in great form. He was, despite the fact that the visit itself was overlaid in terms of issues of clerical abuse and all that. But he was in very good form in Knock and very happy and joyful. And that kind of came across.
Can you remind us of what the weather was like on that day?
Oh, well, I was going to say most unusual for Knock. It was raining on the day, but it wasn't very good at all. The day before was splendid, beautiful day. In fact, the night before, the whole village, people returned, families returned home, relations returned home to their families in Knock for the day itself. And it was kind of a carnival type feel. The night was beautiful. People were walking around through the village up until about 10, 11 o'clock at night. And then the weather changed about mid-morning, about 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. And we did think that he wouldn't land at the airport because it was very, very misty and heavy rain. But land he did, thankfully. It was meant to be, I think. And then proceeded down to, it lightened off then when he arrived, about half 8, quarter to 9. But it didn't dampen anybody's spirits. People were well prepared. They had umbrellas and ponchos and all the rest with them. And so there was a wonderful atmosphere, even in spite of the weather.
Yeah. And no travelling around in a big flash Mercedes for Pope Francis?
No, very simple, very simple. In fact, it was a very small car because he still had a little bit of a limp, you know. He found walking difficult. And you'd kind of wonder whether that was comfortable for him to kind of, it took a little bit of manoeuvring to get into the car. And but it's very, very simple. The Popemobile, he went around in the Popemobile around the grounds of the shrine to greet the people twice. And, you know, they really responded to him and he responded to them. And it was a wonderful moment, one that we won't forget.
And he did formally elevate Knock Shrine to a different status.
He did that, that's right. In 2021, he elevated it to international status, which is kind of, I was asked, can you explain what does that mean? It's kind of like maybe, I suppose maybe if Mayo won the All-Ireland and or if Ireland won the World Cup, it's kind of a title. It's the ultimate, it's the pinnacle recognition for a shrine and for a place of pilgrimage. So it's it just places it on an international status and a status in Rome that other shrines like Lourdes and Fatima have.
It does show, though, that even papal influence can really do nothing for the GAA Senior Football Championship.
Well, you never know. You never know. We kind of I think we leave those kind of things in the hand of the Almighty at this stage.
Yeah, it might take a miracle. Now, he did actually sign a Mayo jersey.
He did, yeah. He signed it at the airport. Again, that was there were a few little moments like that that weren't strictly protocol, if you like. But the nature of people that, you know, there's nothing to beat a little bit of spontaneity and a little bit of enjoyment of the occasion. So somebody presented the jersey to him and he responded no problem. Now handlers around him, you can always see the handlers around him that would be kind of, you know, tutting and whatever. But you know, it's spontaneity. It was a joyful moment and one that he responded very well to.
Now, there's no doubt that security has to be tight around because of what happened to Pope John Paul II. What was the man's name? Ali Adja, who attacked him.
That's right, Ali Adja, yeah. That's right.
And therefore, security has to be tight around the Pope. But some managed to shrug that off, and Pope Francis was one of those.
Yes, he was indeed. Well, actually, it happened the night before as well. I think a young person, everybody was told not to. You can't have a selfie with Pope Francis. Don't take out a camera. Just greet the Pope and move on to the next person. But this young person didn't heed that and had a camera up her sleeve, I think, and just simply took it out and took a selfie. But again, like they're light-hearted moments, really, and enjoyable moments, and reflective of the man himself.
Yeah. Now it's interesting that after the death of Pope Benedict, after the death of Pope John Paul II, there were people who would analyze their papacies and be quite critical. But I suspect that in the case of Pope Francis, there will be little enough criticism and mostly a feeling of love and affection.
Well, every papacy brings that, I suppose, critique, if you like, afterwards. What was done well, what maybe could have been changed, etc. But I think, you know, on the immediate death of a pope, it's always reflective of the fact that he is the pope. He's the head of the Catholic Church and successor to Saint Peter, and all the spiritual, I suppose, importance that lies therein. And you can only imagine what that kind of position and job means to people and to themselves and the effect that it has on their lives. But, you know, it is that sense of thankfulness for a life so well lived and of a papacy that challenged and loved and, I suppose, made us conscious that there is something more to ourselves than just this life. And there is the great beyond.
Father Richard Gibbons, parish priest at Knock, thank you very much for joining us on the programme today.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.